Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1999. Fighting Together for the Future.
Hello. This week I was in Germany. I was there to participate in a congress of the youth division of the National Democratic Party of Germany, the NPD. I had been invited to address their congress. Now, don't let that word democratic in the name of the party fool you. These are really decent people. Nothing democratic about them at all. Political life in Germany has been rather strange since the end of the Second World War. Germany, of course, was divided into two major occupation zones at the end of the war, East and West. In the East, the only political party permitted by our Soviet ally was the Communist Party. In the Western occupation zone, the Democratic allies ruled, mostly the United States. And of course, the United States did things the correct way, the democratic way. We had, after all, brought freedom to Germany, we claimed. Our way was to permit any political party to operate and participate in elections, as long as it was democratic and had approved policies. It was the same way with newspapers, magazines, and so on. There was freedom of the press. Anyone who wanted could publish a newspaper, so long as he was given a license to do so by the U.S. occupation authorities. And the only people who were given licenses to publish were those certified as Democrats. That's Democrat with a small d. The same policy applied in Germany, whether the Democratic Party or the Republican Party was in power back in the United States. Anyway, what this policy in Germany meant in practice was that publishing licenses were given only to people who could prove that they had been opponents of the pre-war German government, which is to say, communists, social democrats, draft dodgers who had fled abroad to avoid military service, Jews, and the like. Jews automatically qualified for everything. And it is absolutely astounding how many of them who had miraculously managed to survive the so-called Holocaust suddenly appeared. And what the policy meant for political parties was that if the occupation authorities decided that they were not sufficiently democratic, they were simply banned and their leaders were thrown into prison. And the eventual withdrawal of most of the occupation forces, the tearing down of the Berlin Wall and so on, didn't change this policy. The present German government is a lineal descendant of the one installed by the U.S. occupation army. So today, in Germany, any genuinely patriotic political party is obliged to employ a good deal of camouflage in order to avoid being banned. Nobody is really fooled by the camouflage, though. Certainly the enemies of the German people aren't fooled. Communists, Jews, homosexuals, feminists, anarchists, and the rest generally protest outside NPD meetings and attempt to disrupt them. That happened at an NPD meeting I attended last year, but the one this week was peaceful, perhaps because it was held in a lovely little Bavarian town, Falkenberg, where the supply of local Jews, feminists, etc. was very limited. Also because several dozen heavily armed riot police patrolled the area outside the meeting hall. If protesters had appeared and the police hadn't been there to protect them, there were at least 200 very sturdy young NPD members with shaved heads and heavy boots among those attending the meeting who would have loved nothing better than to send at least twice their number of protesters to the nearest hospital emergency room. Perhaps the most bizarre aspect of political life in Germany today is the consequence of occupation legislation prohibiting any politically incorrect speech, at least any politically incorrect speech touching on such ultra-taboo topics as race, the Second World War, and, most of all, the Jews. There is a special branch of the German secret police called the Verfassungsschutz. Ironically, that means defense of the Constitution. And their principal responsibility is to ferret out and arrest anyone suspected of having published or said anything in public which might be offensive to Jews. The Verfassungsschutz also arrests people for displaying banned symbols or making forbidden gestures. A German patriot must be careful never to raise his right arm in any way that might be considered provocative by the Verfassungsschutz, even if he is only shielding his eyes from the sun or greeting a friend. A great many German patriots are in prison today for having gone afoul of the Verfassungsschutz in one way or another. What all this means is that speeches like the one I gave at the NPD meeting this week must employ what amounts to a code. One cannot say in public something like, "Jews in New York, Washington, and Tel Aviv are the principal moving force behind the immigration policy which is bringing millions of non-white immigrants into Germany." One must say instead something like, "Those who are the enemies of every nation but their own are behind the immigration policy which is bringing millions of non-whites into Germany." Using this code is a bit of a nuisance, but at least everyone at an NPD meeting, and indeed every politically aware German, understands exactly what is meant. Unfortunately, however, millions of ordinary Germans don't understand. Just as is the case with white Americans, most Germans are lemmings and couch potatoes. They are self-centered, addicted to comfort, materialistic, conformist, consumption-oriented, and very fashion-conscious. In fact, they are desperately eager to be fashionable, and every fashion comes to them through their television screens, just as in America. In the various German hotel rooms I was in this week, I scanned the television channels in order to sample the fare being fed to the Germans. On about half the channels were exactly the same programs seen by Americans, programs made in Hollywood or New York by Jews, but with German speech dubbed in instead of English. On a couple of channels, they didn't even bother to dub in German. Judeo-American garbage culture has so thoroughly penetrated Germany that on some of the programs for the lowest grade lemmings, programs with the dialogue consisting mostly of slang expressions and standard cliches, the average German viewer can follow the primitive English as well as the average American. MTV is an example of this. German teenagers receive their daily dose of poison from New York television Jew Sumner Redstone in precisely the same flavor as American teenagers do. And the television channels which have original German programming are not really much better. No such thing as an independent idea ever appears on German television. If it did, the Verfassungsschutz certainly would haul the offending programmer off to prison. And the poison has its effect. German teenagers, at least in the cities, are looking more and more like American teenagers, slovenly and undisciplined and addicted to Negroid music, Negroid grooming, and Negroid lifestyles. A disgustingly common sight is a blonde German girl walking along hand in hand with a Negro from Africa or the West Indies. All too often there is one or more flat-nosed, dusky-hued offspring toddling along after them. To the establishment, politicians, and the Christian clergy, there is nothing at all wrong with this. The Christian clergy, in fact, encourage it in every way they can. Although I was never in Germany before the disaster of 1945, I have seen enough German films from the 1930s and the early 1940s to make comparisons. One of the mental comparisons I made during my trip this week was between the apathetic, brainwashed, democratic German youth of today and the clean, healthy, athletic, enthusiastic, and disciplined boys and girls in the German youth organizations instituted by Hitler. The boys of the Hitler Youth and the girls in the League of German Girls were proud of their nation and proud of their race and were eager to become proud citizens of a strong and healthy and progressive Germany and march forward together into a bright future. What a difference a few decades of Jewish television propaganda can make. And television is not the only medium through which Judeo-American culture has penetrated Europe. Indeed, one sees familiar American advertising slogans in English on about half the storefronts and billboards in the larger German cities, just as one sees graffiti in English scrawled on walls and in subway cars. This contamination of European culture, and not just German culture, has always seemed to me even worse than what the Jew has done to culture in America. Even before the Second World War, the Jew had built a new nest for himself in America and moved his center of operations here from Europe. Hitler, of course, helped him make his move with a good strong kick in the backside. Now the Jew is throwing his filth from his new nest back into the old one, fouling the source of our cultural spring. And of course, this is deliberate. The really unfortunate thing about it is that outside the NPD and a few other patriotic organizations, Germans do not really care about this cultural contamination, nor do they object to it. As with Americans, as long as there is plenty of beer in the refrigerator and entertainment on television, they don't care what is happening to their country, their culture, or their race. They don't see anything amiss in turning on their television receivers and seeing Oprah's black face grinning back at them. I'll get back to this subject of Judeo-American cultural contamination in a minute. First, I want to mention that despite my horror and disgust at what 54 years of contact with America has done to Germany, my whole purpose in being in Germany this week was to increase at least one facet of that contact, namely collaboration between my organization, the National Alliance, which operates mostly in America, and the NPD, which operates exclusively in Germany. In fact, as I told the NPD Congress in my talk, it is essential, not just helpful, but necessary for genuine nationalist groups everywhere to increase their degree of collaboration across national borders. The natural tendency for a nationalist group, of course, is to devote all its effort to building its strength in its own country and to educating the people of its own nation. The National Alliance is really unique in that it has no geographical restrictions on membership. We define nationality in terms of race, not geography. Our enemy also does that. To the Jews, it makes no difference whether another Jew was born in Russia or Canada or England or Brazil or the United States. All that matters is whether or not he was born a Jew. And the fact is that the Jew is the common enemy of every nation but his own, and of every nationalism but his own. The same Jews who are attempting to plunder and weaken and destroy white America also are attempting to plunder and weaken and destroy Germany. And the Jews in Germany are in constant and total collaboration with the Jews in Russia, in England, in the United States, and in every other nation which is being used as a host by them. And they have had centuries of experience at such collaboration. So, if nationalists are to gain real strength anywhere, ultimately if we are to survive anywhere, we must overcome the international Jew. And we can only do that through collaboration across national borders. If a genuine nationalist movement gained governmental power anywhere and began taking appropriate cleansing action in its own country to undo the damage done by decades of Jewish policies, then the Jews in every other country would not hesitate to combine forces and unleash all of their military strength against that one country. They wouldn't stop even at unleashing a nuclear war if faced with the prospect of completely losing their grip on a major nation. We have seen that happen before, 60 years ago, and we must not let it happen again. Perhaps a nationalist movement in the United States might be able to become successful without having to worry about being suppressed by outside forces. But really, we're just about the only country for which that's the case. Nationalists in every other country need to worry very much about Jew-instigated suppression from outside, as the Serbs certainly know. In fact, that's what the New World Order is all about. Even in the United States, nationalists, the National Alliance, for example, can benefit from nationalist successes elsewhere. What this means is that success for nationalists everywhere, even those in the United States, will be much more likely if all nationalists coordinate their activities, if they grow together. We must not become too successful anywhere before we have become at least moderately successful in a few other places. Well, I talked to the NPD Congress about specific ways in which we ought to be collaborating across international borders, ways beyond merely exchanging publications and inviting one another to our big meetings. I talked about nuts and bolts details that I won't bore you with now. I also talked about the spiritual side of nationalist collaboration across borders, and the long and difficult struggle which lies ahead of us. Nothing is more important than a deep belief in the rightness and the necessity and the beauty of our cause. Belief, of course, should be able to exist alone in a single individual, but in fact it thrives best in company. One person who believes very strongly in something may devote his entire life to serving his belief, but if he knows that tens of thousands of his kinsmen around the world also are serving the same belief, then he has a great advantage, the advantage of confidence, of optimism, of enthusiasm. Most of all, he will act more boldly, with more daring, in the knowledge that he is not alone. And really, there's nothing more important for us, outnumbered and outgunned as we are, than courage, than boldness, than audacity. Certainly, we must be wise. We must plan tactics and strategy with the greatest care. We must avoid serious errors. But above everything else, we must act with confidence and boldness. And the greatest guarantor of boldness is the assurance that many others share our belief and are acting with us, that they will cheer our successes and aid us in our difficulties. And if our allies are spread throughout many nations, so much the better. That makes the rightness of our cause universal. It is not just I who believes that we ought to be free, that we ought to be the masters of our own fate. The Germans agree with me. The Russians agree. The Irish agree. The Poles agree. The Magyars agree. The Swedes agree. The Romanians agree. In every country in Europe, voices are being raised now for the same cause. This certainly strengthens the conviction we all have that we are right and that we must prevail. That, among other things, is what I told the delegates at the NPD Congress in Germany, except, of course, that I had to phrase everything in the peculiar sort of double talk required by the Verfassungsschutz. And let me tell you, in plain language, nationalists everywhere need all of the moral support they can give each other, and that is nowhere more true than in Germany. The Jews really are doing a job on Germany. Munich, where I spent more time than anywhere else this week, already is one-third non-German. Turks and other Asians are everywhere. Blacks are increasingly numerous. The kindergartens and public elementary schools in Germany's larger cities are as much as 80% non-German. and non-Germans continue to pour into Germany. One non-German group whose numbers in Germany have increased especially rapidly in the past 2 years is the Jews. They have been pouring into Germany from the former Soviet Union. The German government welcomes them with open arms and gives them a number of valuable subsidies to start them off on a more prosperous track than other immigrants. Jews from Russia and Ukraine already completely dominate organized crime, including the white slave trade in Germany. Whenever a German complains in public about what is being done to his country, if he phrases his complaint carefully enough so that the Verfassungsschutz doesn't lock him up for hate speech, the sold-out politicians, the Christian clergy, the Jews, and all too many of his brainwashed, guilt-ridden fellow Germans are all over him, accusing him of racism, anti-Semitism, fascism, you name it. In Austria, which was torn away from the rest of Germany by the victorious Democrats and Communists at the end of the war, a conservative leader, Jörg Haider, won a surprisingly strong second place in the elections last month. The Jews in Germany immediately went into their Chicken Little act, shrieking that the sky was falling. Oi, they, wasn't 6 million enough already? Why do you want to make us suffer more already? Etc. They made the sort of viciously intemperate remarks about Jörg Haider that they make over here about Patrick Buchanan. And the really unfortunate thing about it is that Haider is not an anti-Semite. He has appointed Jews to high positions in his party. He merely opposes some Jewish policies, especially the one which is flooding Austria with non-German immigrants. But even that opposition, especially on the part of a German, is enough to send the Jews into a spitting, shrieking rage. Fortunately, there are Germans, though Haider seems not to be among them, who want to send the Jews into something besides a rage. I was with a group of them this week in Bavaria, and their number is growing. There remains much, much more work to be done in Germany, however. The average German is still inclined to grovel and begin apologizing whenever the Jews begin complaining about how persecuted they are and how much the Germans owe them. The Germans as a whole, probably too polite and too civilized to begin with, have let themselves be beaten down by the anti-German propaganda of the post-war period until they are in a truly pitiful moral state today, with no pride and no backbone, nothing but guilt and self-hatred. With a birth rate well below the replacement level, the number of Germans is declining every year, while the number of non-Germans on German soil grows. But the resistance also is beginning to grow, as I mentioned. The Jews and their collaborators in the government and the Christian churches are desperate to keep this resistance under control. My personal opinion is that they will fail. I want to do whatever I can do to assure that they fail, because, as I told the Germans at the NPD Congress, our destinies are linked. If the Jews succeed in destroying the German nation, they will have an easier time destroying us. And if the Germans successfully resist their efforts, then our own success in overcoming the Jews and their collaborators will be much more likely. Thanks for being with me again today.